Welcome to ViralCast, MovieViral.com's official podcast. I'm Dan, the executive editor for the website, and I'm here with Caleb, a contributor for the site. And we were going to be talking today about movies this summer that had some major studio involvement changes that came at different times. We have Prometheus, which saw a very early change from the original draft to Damon Lindelof's draft. And then we'll be talking about The Amazing Spider-Man, which people kind of know maybe got changed a little bit after they'd already made some edits in shooting. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how this kind of plays out to people when they kind of know now more than they ever have how much the studios are actually getting involved into the production of the films. So start off by saying, hi, Caleb, how's it going?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
I'm very good. So the big story this week came out was that the script that John Spates, I think it's how you say his name, that he wrote originally for Prometheus came out, and then he confirmed it on Twitter that it really was his draft. And we'll provide a link to that in the article for this also, so you guys can read it yourself. It was originally called Alien Engineers. It was a much more direct prequel than Prometheus was. I personally actually very much like the script. It actually takes place on the real moon that is featured in the movie Alien, as opposed to Prometheus, which takes place on another moon, which I don't know if they specifically say that it's in the same area or not, but I imagine that's probably what it is that maybe it's in the same area, but it's a different moon than what's in the original Alien movie. So I like that this one is in the same very much, so it actually explains all the little things that when you're watching the movie Prometheus, you're thinking, oh, there's that big ship that we see in that movie. Yeah, well, it is that ship, you know, as opposed to, oh, well, it's just like those other ships. So that was kind of, I thought was weird in the movie that I liked this. It was much more of a directness to it. We actually do get to see a real alien in this movie, like the xenomorph, as they call them, as in the script, as opposed to in the movie, you're only seeing like the early versions. The concept of the evolution is still there, but it's all done within the script. So you actually see the final product of the alien by the time that the script's over, that the movie's over in the original version. So I'm sure that you be liking the idea of it being a direct prequel, probably like that, right?
Yeah.
So, that was kind of some of the bigger things. The other big thing is, it's not about them trying to find like eternal life, or at least the secret mission. It's about terraforming, so it's much more down to earth, if you will. You know, they're
like more of an environmental message.
Well, yeah, like because Waylon wants them to go to this planet because, I mean, whether he knows anything about that or not, it's hard to tell. But he's definitely terraforming here. He's trying to terraform Mars. And so once they get there, and Vickers who's played by Charlize Theron in the movie, she's actually, instead of being his daughter, she's just the next in line for the president spot for the company. But she's all pissed that she has to go because now she's basically out of the running. So but the rule is that she has to, if they see anything that could be useful to them, then she takes over and she brings out these secret military people that she has on the ship. So the secret is not so much that Waylon is on the ship, but that there's these military guys on there that are going to kind of take over the thing because they want to basically strip the place of all their terraforming stuff. Because that's what they find is these pyramids that are alluded to in the original script for Alien. There's these pyramids all over the equator of the moon, and they're actually meant to be terraforming things. But it obviously never happened because it's still not breathable and stuff. So that's pretty cool, and so it's much more straightforward like that. Instead of him trying to find eternal life and then sneaking in on the ship and everything, it's much more direct. It makes more sense. There's a lot of little things like that because just knowing those things are different, you can imagine that a lot of it is different. But for me, the biggest thing that I liked was that the characters actually make sense. And if you guys have ever watched Red Letter Media and their videos, they have like this little 4-minute video where it's literally just the one guy asking questions. Why'd this happen? Why'd this happen? Because these things don't make any sense. And so that's one of the things I like. You know, people don't react the right way, I feel like, in the real movie. In the script, they make more sense. So she actually had the main character we see in the script, who's actually named, is not named Shaw. Their name's different. I forget what it is now. Yeah. So they changed the name just to Shaw for some reason. But it, you know, Watts is her name in the script. And so the only, she still has that kind of surgery scene, which is pretty awesome. It's a little different, though. A little more badass, but it's still in there. Afterwards, in the movie, in the film that we see, she actually comes out and she sees Waylon and Vickers. And then, like, no one actually says anything about the fact that she's covered in blood and practically naked. You know, it's like no one has a reaction, but this one they do. You know, that one biologist that's going, goochie, goochie, goo, to that snake thing. That doesn't happen. It's a little more organic, the way that it attacks him. Things like that. They're not pissed off that they found dead aliens. They're actually happy that they found life on a different planet. Like, there's so many things that make more sense in the script, I felt.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I forgot about all the problems with with the movie. Now that you're... Because I've recently watched it. I bought it on a 3D Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And, just, you know, evaluate the 3D quality at home rather than in the theater, which I think is much better in the home. Right. But anyway, I was just watching it. I didn't even, you know, realize that there are all these problems until you brought them up. Now I'm like, oh yeah, I remember them not reacting to her coming from the abortions. I like to call it the abortion theme.
Yeah.
Where she's all covered in, like, blood and gook and whatnot. And they're like, oh, yeah. Well, hey, look, it's Mr. Whalen. Come say hello.
Yeah, it's like, Yeah, so there's a lot of that kind of stuff that really bothered me. I mean, obviously, the movie, it's visually beautiful. It's directed well, and it brings up some interesting questions and stuff, which I like. But the characters just don't make any sense. And I know some people complain about the plot, but I liked it. The plot's a little different in the movie, and one of the things that's different is the engineers in terms of what their role was. We still see that kind of early scene, but instead of it being... they don't really say it, but they imply, to my understanding, that they basically start life on Earth. Because he takes that black stuff and he just kind of, like, disintegrates.
Yeah.
That still kind of happens in the script, but then instead what ends up happening is that humans already exist. What they're doing is they're putting their genetic makeup into them. And we see that over periods of a couple hundred years, periodically they go back and they interject their some DNA stuff into people to kind of help advance their evolution, which is kind of interesting. So it's not so much that they start everything, but literally, like, engineers are kind of helping build human civilization. There's actually a more direct quote in there too, or direct dialogue about the whole Jesus Christ concept that Ridley Scott has mentioned. I don't know if you heard of that one.
I have not.
Yeah, so one of the big questions in the movie is that, you know, why did they stop coming? Why did they get mad at us all of a sudden? These engineers, and there's still kind of that question in the script, in the original script. But they actually make it's almost like a joke, though. But they kind of make the reference to maybe that he was Jesus, that one of the engineers was Jesus Christ, and that because we crucified him, they got pissed at us, and so they started this whole thing to try to destroy us.
that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's never actually said in the original, you know, in the real movie, but Ridley Scott has kind of mentioned that, you know, as being a thing. But that doesn't really matter if it's on the movie. But the script actually does make it's almost like an offhand joke, but it makes you think about it. You're like, oh shit, maybe that's really what's going on. The ending's different too. They don't actually leave the planet in the script. They stay on the. She's still stuck on the planet with David's head, and they apparently you can send out like a beam of light from this pyramid, and they do that, and then some other planet or moon has its own pyramid with a beam of light, and then you see these bunch of pyramids with beams of light, and it's like, oh shit, they contacted somebody, and it's probably the engineers. So it's kind of interesting. But it still leaves it open-ended, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah. But the ending for Prometheus, the final ending, I think that makes it, sort of sets up the beginning of, well, not the beginning of Alien, but it sort of sets up Alien better than the original script ending, where they go off, because the engineer's ships are carrying this black goo, mm-hmm. which does turn into the xenomorphs. They have to go, but you know, has to happen to David and Shaw in order for something for the black goo to get out. So perhaps they crash or something like that. I don't know, but
The thing is, though, in the script, though, if you know, it is that planet or that moon, so it actually makes sense because it does get out because they do still crash the thing. The xenomorph actually does come out of the ship because it actually bursts through the engineer's chest while it's trying to climb out of space. And so it's pretty cool. And so there is actually you know, without really directly saying what's going on, there's several chambers within the ship. So that ship could still be, it makes sense, that ship could be the one that has it, because there's different chambers have different types of aliens. You know, so and there actually isn't really goo so much in the script as there is in the movie. It's more like it's just different types of it's hard to explain what it is because they don't really say it very well, but it's not goo. So like at one point it's these like bugs, and different part it is really the aliens and stuff, and
so it's like an arc maybe.
Yeah, and you see that evolution. You see a little bit of the evolution in the final version, but you see a really direct evolution. Going to a full-on xenomorph in the script, so it's kind of cool. So for me, I feel like it makes you don't have. I understand with Prometheus what they were trying to do there probably was that they didn't want it to be just like, oh, now here's how Alien begins. They want there to be more of a story in between so they could do more movies. I think that's why they did that. But I feel like by doing that, they kind of forced things to be so different. I don't know. I mean, so the big question coming out of all this then is, you know, why did the studio not choose his script? Obviously, there's some basic elements that are still there, but when Damon Lindelof came in to rewrite it, he rewrote it big time, as you know, you can tell from all of our changes that we're mentioning. You know, I kind of want to maybe get your opinion, Caleb. Why do you think the studio went in such a big different direction with this, focusing more on bigger questions and not making it such a direct sequel or prequel?
I think it's just what you said there, that they wanted, you know, more movies. I mean, Damon Lindelof, he's the king of not answering questions. So I think they might have brought him on to, you know, just do that, to, you know, capitalize on having to answer questions in more movies, making, you know, people pay for making people pay to get the answers to the questions that they want answered. And Prometheus set that up perfectly. We still don't know why the engineers hated human beings.
Right.
We don't know where Shaw and David went. So all this can be answered in, you know, in sequels, in potential sequels, if the, you know, the, that is, if they decide to do any more movies. I'm not sure how well Prometheus performed at the box office. I don't remember.
It did pretty well. I think they were talking about they were trying to get another movie going, because I believe that it did really solid, especially for a Radar movie. Because I think I'm gonna look it up right now. The domestic gross was $126 million, and worldwide it made $400 million. So, you know, for $130 million budget on an R film, that's a pretty good return.
Okay, yeah. We'll definitely see more Prometheus films in the future. So sequels in the future.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, I was just surprised by how far they took it, because I think. For me, and like I mentioned, I really liked the original script, and I think that, you know, especially just like any other script that you read, you can always tweak it and stuff before the final product. They could have easily done a few tweaks here and there, especially with some dialogue, I felt, and some of the inner cuts they had were a little odd. I think that the final version of that script that I read could have easily been a really, really good movie. And I think it would have been a lot more straightforward, and I think people would have liked the idea that it's that. But it feels like they were trying to really change kind of what Prometheus was going to be, this bigger question. You know, they changed the name of the ship from Magellan to Prometheus, and there's this kind of idea of they need bigger questions and bigger philosophical things. Like, maybe they felt it was too small, but like, I never felt Alien was meant to be a big question series, you know? It was all about... Whelan Company was always about the bottom line, you know? They only saw the aliens as a source of revenue for making weapons, and obviously from Resurrection you can tell that too. So it just seems like they didn't care about that stuff. They just wanted to it's got to be bigger questions, and I don't know. It's just, for me, and like I said, there's still things I really liked about the movie, but the character interactions were what bothered me. And I felt like if he had dealt with those better, it would make a lot more sense. But that was the part where, like, there were things where they directly, you know, he had the right reactions to certain things that still occur in both movies, and yet they didn't do it the right same way. And I was just like, it's almost like he deliberately just said, we got to make him act differently, otherwise they're going to think it's too close. So for me, that was kind of the big question for me, was like, why did they have to change some of those things? I was like, you don't need to change those things.
Do you think maybe that's a growing trend in Hollywood to make films that shouldn't be, you know, big question films,
I could see that. I mean, I think, you know, there was a lot of hype going into this movie, and I think that they felt like, we have to make this big. We have to kind of go, and I think someone like Lindelof, obviously, like you mentioned, he likes to have these kind of big questions and more philosophical kind of stuff. If anybody watches Lost, they'll realize that. So I think there's kind of a question, you know, I don't think Transformers does that, but there's something where there was a sense of, you know, it's Ridley Scott, it's the, you know, kind of the Alien series. I think there might be an issue of, like, we kind of make this bigger. I think another big issue, though, is that they didn't want to make it a direct prequel. And it seems like that's the rumblings I've heard, too, is that the studio was very much did not want to make it, they did not want to associate it so directly with Alien. And that really was strange to me, because, I mean, a lot of people were questioning if that was the reason why, you know, that they had kind of gone away from making it an Alien prequel, and they were calling it Prometheus, not calling it Alien. They never really directly have aliens. You know, some people were kind of questioning that, but I've heard some things from some film blogs where there might have been some direct answers from studios saying, like, yeah, we didn't want it to be connected. And that really is strange to me. I mean, why do you think that the studios wouldn't want to be connected with such a big franchise?
I don't know how they could expect it not to be connected. I mean, the engineers are probably the biggest question from the original Alien.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are naturally going to associate it with the first, you know, they're going to associate Prometheus with the first film.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they were trying to accomplish with saying, you know, this is not a direct prequel, it's not associated, we don't want to associate it with Alien.
Right.
People are going to do that anyway, whether that was in your intention or not.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously it takes place in that same world. They're implying that, but
yeah.
This idea that, oh, it's not really a direct sequel, but it's in the world. Like, they were constantly sidestepping that. I remember during a lot of the interviews in Comic-Con and things like that, where they were really sidestepping the concept of prequel, and they were really trying to say, well, it's in the same universe, but it's not really a prequel. I'm just like, why? Like, people want to see a prequel. Like, why don't you give people what they want? You know, wouldn't that help promote your film? That's what I don't understand. Like, when you connect it, I mean, here's this thing that's a little more abstract, but then you can connect it to something that's a big thing. Like, why would you not want to do that? Usually studios jump at any chance to connect something to something else. So the idea that they would try to deliberately shy away from that, unless, I mean, I don't think Alien has a bad connotation to it, does it?
No, I don't think it does at all.
I mean, I know that people don't quite like the Alien vs. Predator series. The first one was kind of, you know, cheesy good, but other than that, I think that the Alien series as a whole has a very positive kind of, like, a audience score or whatever you would call it. In people's minds, it generally has a positive connotation to it. So it's just really strange at how much they were trying to distance themselves from it. And I imagine that was one of the bigger reasons they decided to go away from, you know, the original script and go with this more kind of bigger question. It's much more than just this kind of concept. That's interesting. Do you have anything else you want to say about that, or do you want to move on to Spider-Man?
Well, I'm trying to think if I had anything else to say about Prometheus. I had a bit of a few theories about, you know, aliens that showed up. Well, there's only three aliens that showed up in Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest one, I remember a couple months ago, Christopher Walken had done an interview with MTV News about Seven Psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asked a question about Prometheus, and he's talking about this albino octopus. It was the funniest thing ever, because I'm like, were you not paying attention during the movie?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, where'd the albino octopus come from? And I'm like, did you not pay attention during the abortion scene? I mean, it came out of her.
Mm-hmm.
But that thing, that one alien there, I do believe is an early version of the face hugger.
Mm.
If you looked at the way it laid on top of the engineer at the end of the movie,
right,
and sort of like squeezed him. It was laying up there like a huge face hugger. I'm like, oh my goodness, what in the world? And then of course, you know, the chest burster at the end there.
Right.
So
that's probably the most direct connection. And I was thinking about in the original script was that there were different chambers with different versions of these kind of aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was one that was almost exactly aliens. It was not like xenomorphs. It was not anything else. It was pretty much just xenomorphs. And that's where we kind of, the end of the movie kind of really deals with those versions. I mean, you see some of the other versions earlier, but that's the one where you really see that. So it wasn't so much that there was an evolution in the story like there was in Prometheus, whereas, like, it came out of one, then it went to another, then it came out of another person, then, like, and that's how it changed. It was more like there were different – it's like they were experimenting with different versions of this thing. So you had different chambers that had different ones. So there pretty much was a chamber that more or less had that xenomorph thing. And you actually saw the facehugger and everything. So it's pretty crazy. So the in fact, I think – what ends up happening to her, and I forget how she doesn't get pregnant in the original script. If that's not how she gets the thing, it's actually because David holds her down and puts a version of the facehugger on her.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so then she gets the whole abortion thing. But it's actually it's like a less bony, more slimy kind of version of the facehugger. But Holloway still gets infected, but in a different way. Like, everything kind of happens slightly different, but similar things end up happening, but the way they do it is a little different. I don't know. It felt just a lot more direct and less forced in the original script, but...
Yeah.
So, a lot of changes.
All right.
Hmm?
Oh, no, continue. I'm sorry.
So, so kind of going on from that, we'll talk about The Amazing Spider-Man now. The Prometheus, we were talking about the idea that the studio Fox changed something that could have been very much in line with the whole series, and they changed it very early on to something very different. And I think it's less successful, but, you know, that's up to argument. And then here with Spider-Man, what they did is they actually filmed everything, and then they changed a lot of it. So, you know, this whole script, this new script coming out for Prometheus kind of made me remind me back to Spider-Man, because there had been a few articles I saw. One on Badass Digest is probably one of the better ones I've seen, where they, almost right after the movie came out, they were talking about this whole idea that there were all these scenes that we kind of saw in some of the advertising, and then also, I don't know if they're on the DVD now, but this idea of, like, there was a bigger story in The Amazing Spider-Man. They kind of cut out this idea that Peter Parker was not just accidentally bitten, that he already had something inside of him, and that the spider bite just kind of brought it out, and that maybe there was much more going on with his parents from that. And so, and I want to know from you, Caleb, I mean, when watching the film, did you feel like there was anything that they were kind of cutting out, or that you're missing on at all while you were watching the film?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I went to see it, there was something that it just didn't feel right. Like, I was watching the trailers and everything, and it was saying, you know, Spider-Man's greatest secrets will be revealed. And I'm like, by the end of the movie, I'm like, you know, what secrets?
Exactly.
Where are the secrets? You know, what's going on here? It just felt, I think the reason is, I felt that the movie was, you know, it wasn't well done. It was too soon to reboot Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And them cutting out the untold story, the quote-unquote untold story,
right,
is what brought those feelings out, I think, because it just felt too close, too similar to Sam Raimi's original Spider-Man. I mean, it's only been 10 years that all that is still fresh in everyone's mind. I mean, you go on Tumblr or you go anywhere on the internet and you see, you know, all these GIFs and memes from Spider-Man 3 and all that. So it's still fresh in everyone's mind. They really needed to distance themselves from the original movies and do something completely different. And they didn't. I mean, they changed the villain. I think that's all they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel almost exactly the same way. I mean, as I was watching it, I still enjoyed it a little, to a certain degree, but while I'm watching it, I kept thinking, like, this is a lot like the original one. You know, it's a little bit darker and stuff, and there's some slight changes here and there, but I couldn't help but think about that original one. And, you know, a great comparison just in terms of that aspect of it is Batman. You know, in 2005, they rebooted Batman, but they waited a good, 8 years. I think 97 was the last one of the original series that they did in the 90s. So that was a good 8 years after that one. And then I think it was, 16 years after the first one. So, but it felt very different. You know, they made it very different. You know, a completely different story. You really got to see him becoming Batman. Much more organic, I thought, than that one. So, you know, they did that right. Whereas with Spider-Man, it felt very similar. It felt like they were trying to find ways to maybe go around it. Like that whole, you know, that with great power comes great responsibility. They had a line kind of similar to that. that his uncle said in this one too, but he was like, it almost felt like he was deliberately trying not to say that.
Yeah.
it was like trying to find a way to say, you know, if you have good, then you should do good. I don't know. He was saying some sort of quote that was like, oh man, he's really trying not to say that with great power comes great responsibility. So there was a lot of that in there too. And I agree, especially the whole untold story concept. They really pushed that. I mean, it was in all that promotional stuff.
It's still in the promotions for the home release.
Yeah, yeah. And now they're saying, oh, now you really see the untold story. That's what they're trying to... But it's like, yeah, that was their big push. And yet, I'm like, how is it untold? This is very similar. And people are already joking about that idea. Like, you know, how is it an untold story if we just saw the movies, you know, less than 10 years ago? And I'm like, well, now you really can make that joke because they didn't even do anything different. You know, and I think that some of the stuff that they supposedly cut out, or that they, you know, there's a lot of talk that the studio cut it out at the last minute, that they were trying to make the whole backstory a little more cleaner and less controversial, or maybe they want to reveal it in the sequels. I heard a rumor about that they're trying to save it for the sequels. But you can kind of tell, and I keep referencing people back to this great Badass Digest article, you could definitely, you felt like it was a little choppy, that there were some things you're just like, you know, especially because there were some pivotal things you saw in the promotional stuff, like the trailers and things, where they were saying things like, you know, it looked like that Connors knew about his past, about Peterson, you know, if you want to know about your past, Peter, come, you know, come get it, like things like that. And it just, all that was gone. Like all of it. It's like they watered it down for the audience or something. And I guess it worked because it made money. It didn't make as much money, but I mean, I don't know. Do you think that they were trying to clean it up for audiences, or do you think they were trying to save it maybe for sequels?
They were probably trying to save it for sequels, but it just didn't work for me. I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, Spider-Man's my favorite superhero. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the movie. But it's just those questions were still lingering. I mean, where is the untold story? That's the whole thing. I mean, I think with the post-credit scene, mm-hmm. You know, did you tell the boy about his father? That, I think, you know, they were definitely trying to save all the untold story stuff for the sequels.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's something like that where, and I almost feel like another really way to connect these two movies that we're talking about, Prometheus and Amazing Spider-Man, it feels like the studios made a concerted effort to change the original version or what might have been a better original version of the movie in order to kind of save things for a sequel. You know, like Prometheus, they deliberately, you know, made sure that they weren't on that same moon and that they had to lead towards it. Spider-Man, they got rid of some of that backstory of his parents. You know, I mean, I personally really don't like that idea. You know, you should always make the movie you want to make. You know, sometimes they set up these franchises, but these are both movies you could tell early on were designed to be set up for franchises.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating because it's like, I want to see a movie and I want to see everything that movie should be telling me. And the idea that you want to try to save things, you know, especially if you already have at least something that makes sense, and then you want to try to cut things out and change things to save it for later, that really kind of frustrates me as a film watcher. And I keep trying to think of other movies that have really done that on a big scale, but it's hard to think. This is probably the only time I've seen in one summer two big summer movies that have done that. Obviously in very different ways, but they were both deliberately trying to cut things and change things so they could save it for more movies. And I don't think that's a very good trend in Hollywood. what do you think?
I agree. It's not good. I think I wanted to also discuss, you know, Mr. Rotha.
Oh, yeah.
He just mysteriously, like, disappeared after the bridge scene. I don't think we saw him again after that.
Yeah.
And my friends were like, because I was debating with them, because I had read this Badass Digest before I went to see the movie, mm-hmm. so I knew where to look for the missing things. That was probably also part of the problem why I didn't like it the first time around. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But they're trying to debate with me on whether, you know, he was killed on the bridge or not. I'm like, no, you never saw him die. You just saw him jump out of the car and run. You right. never saw the lizard, like, scratch him or, you know, throw him off a bridge or anything. He just doesn't show up anymore in the movie, which is really weird. Mm-hmm. So there's that part. I have the Amazing Spider-Man on Blu-ray. I haven't, you know, explored all the special features yet. I'm probably going to go in right after this is over to see what was cut and if it's in the deleted scenes. Maybe try to piece together the untold story.
Yeah, I believe that they're releasing some of the stuff, but not everything.
Those bastards.
Yeah, so I think that some of the things that I think they're afraid probably of providing too much, because then people go like, why wasn't this in the real movie? I think they're maybe a little afraid of that. So I don't know. And then obviously they want to save it for the sequel. So if they just reveal it now, then it's kind of pointless. So I don't know. It just frustrates me to see these studios really kind of just interject themselves and say, hey, we need to change this so we can make more movies. And I know that it's not a new thing in terms of studios getting involved. And I mean, there's a great book that I actually reviewed for the site a little while ago called Development Hell. And it's about these kind of sometimes famous movies that were made or ones that never got made, and how much of a struggle it was to make these movies. Where you had something as simple as a producer didn't like a writer, and so they wanted things changed. Like it's pretty amazing how much petty stuff was involved in killing really good scripts. So it shouldn't surprise me too much to see how much a studio can, for silly reasons or for purely greedy reasons, change or you know, do whatever they want to any kind of script.
Yeah. Along with the Amazing Spider-Man cuts, I think it's along the lines of like with the book adaptation films. Mm-hmm. Now they're splitting the last books into two movies, like
yeah,
Breaking Dawn Part 1, Breaking Dawn Part 2. They're doing it with The Hunger Games. Like, that's getting on my nerves.
and it's tough, I know with books, it's always tough to get everything in there because books are pretty thick in terms of their content, you know, but with movies, you can really kind of pad a movie pretty easily. So a script that's why, you know, when you read a movie script, it's, you know, one page per minute. But you have these books that are 300-400 pages long. So I think that's the reason part of it also. Obviously, they're trying to make money, but I think that it's tough. I mean, I've heard someone saying they could have done each Lord of the Rings movie, they could have done each of those into three movies. So you'd have like nine Lord of the Rings movies because there's that much content. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. But it's tough. It's tough when you're trying to interject, but there's got to be a way you can do it. You know, I think we saw it with a lot of other movies that how many movies have been made that have been adaptations? You know, it's like you can do it if you want to. You just got to find out what to cut.
Mm-hmm.
So editing is always important. But you know, you got to make money. I mean, a great example is Breaking Dawn this weekend. Made $141 million.
Even despite me spoiling it on Twitter for some people?
I did not see the spoil. Actually, I finally saw it last night. And
In your man card.
I went with a female.
Oh, okay.
But actually, they're not terrible. The books are okay. They have some good things in them, but most of it's junk. And the movies have gotten progressively better. The first one was just awful. And then the second one was a little better, but still pretty bad. By the third time around, they were like, okay, they're making these things watchable, at least. And actually, this last one was the best one in the series. And I thought the twist they did compared to the books was actually kind of cool. And you actually got to see some action, which you wouldn't have done if they had kept it to the original. So, you know, And I always feel like they could make these movies pretty cool if they were allowed to deviate from the books. This whole Twilight Saga concept could actually be a pretty cool movie series if you were allowed to deviate from the books a little bit and not focus so much on the romance, because there's some cool mythology in there. And I think that if they were allowed to explore that mythology more and things, you could actually make a pretty cool series that still kind of was similar, you know?
They probably will in the next go-around, because that they were rebooting the Twilight franchise once this one was done.
Yeah, there's always rumors of that, so. But, you know, it makes money, so it wouldn't surprise me. And they even have that Midnight Sun book, which is, like, supposed to be from the Vampire's Guide point of view, Edward's point
of view. I thought she canceled that because
she didn't finish it
online or something.
Yeah, apparently she didn't finish it. Yeah, because of that, she got all upset. But they could still do a movie based on that, too, if they wanted to still. They could still do, that could be, like, their way of rebooting it, so I don't know. You know, they got to make money. Once again, the studio's got to make money, so they'll keep redoing it. Maybe they'll make it better. Maybe they'll give it a better budget. I don't know what the budget. This time the budget was $120 million. So you go from $37 million on the first one. Because I remember thinking, God, that's a small budget for that kind of movie. No wonder that the effects look terrible. To $120. Although the effects in this, some of them are pretty bad. They had like CGI babies and stuff. It was weird.
Oh.
They did, because, like, the baby, they had to, like, have it be controlled for various scenes, and so it was obviously CGI. Like, they had some kind of baby, and I don't know how the effects worked, how they did it, but you could definitely tell there was something off.
I was watching Jimmy Fallon, and Robert Pattinson was on. Mm. He said that they had a baby wearing a wig or something like that.
Yeah.
the baby would start crying, and they had to, you know, because they don't like wearing a wig or something like that, they had to put another baby in there, and they had a lot of problems with actual babies, so maybe that's why they went with...
They did some CGI. I mean, the entire it's not the entire baby CGI. Like, it looks like they combined, like, things. I don't know. It was really weird. It was hard to... I couldn't tell what they did, but you could definitely tell it was off. But, you know...
Maybe it was supposed to be that way, because it's like a unnatural child.
I mean, and that's one way to look at it, I guess. Because there was another part where, like, the kid... Because the kid grows really fast. That's the whole concept. And then there's one part where they wanted to have her face from, like, the actual actress that plays her when they're in the climax. So they have her face, but they make her look younger a little bit, like, because they want to make it look like... She's, like, I don't know how old she really is, like, 7 or 8. But they want to make her look, like, 4 or 5. And so she's a little smaller, but she looks... It just looks weird. And there's a part where they show in the future her being old, and it looks weird, too. Because it's still her face, but, like, on like, a 20-year-old woman.
You had one job, CGI team.
Exactly. $120 million. What did you spend that on? So, on werewolves. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what I want to talk about mostly for this whole thing, this idea of these studios making these changes to films, mostly for greed, it seems like. They want to make more movies, and so they want to save as much as they can. And that kind of frustrates me, so it was a little bit of a venting process. did you have any, this is obviously one of our shorter podcasts, but do you have any last words about all this, Caleb?
I look forward to, the Prometheus follow-up films, if those are made, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I'm very interested to see, you know, where they go with the whole untold story thing, if that ever actually gets told.
Yeah, hopefully it does. And same with Prometheus. I mean, I've heard some things that Damon Lindelof won't be writing the second one.
Oh.
I've heard rumors of that. Obviously, who knows? And to a certain degree, I hope that's true. or that hopefully he's heard all the criticism and he at least takes it in a little bit.
He's a good sport. He pokes fun at himself a lot on his Twitter.
Right, and that's good. I mean, he actually confirmed, and that's one thing I don't think I've mentioned yet in the podcast, he actually confirmed his first draft that had also been leaked online, which I haven't read because I didn't want to get confused. but, I mean, what matters is the final product for him. So, and we'll link that too. So we'll link all these things in the article, so you can see all the both Lindelof's first draft and the very, very first draft by John Spates. And then we'll also link the two articles that we've been referencing mostly here, Badass Digest and IO9, so you guys can see a little bit what we're talking about, and hopefully you guys can learn more about this thing. And that's pretty much it. Thanks, Caleb, for coming on. Obviously, one of our shorter podcasts, but I think this has been pretty good.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
And then we'll find another interesting topic to talk about next time. If you guys have any suggestions, if you're listening to this and something comes up and you ever want to say, hey, you guys should do a podcast, let us know on Twitter or comment here, and we'll definitely do it. I like these whole concept podcasts as opposed to just like running down what happened over the week. So if you guys have any kind of cool concepts that you guys want us to talk about, we'll definitely do that.